This is Dream City, a podcast series from Feet in Two Worlds. I'm Jocelyn Gonzalez. We're exploring stories of migration and personal history. We'll introduce you to new names and voices and reveal why the immigrants in these stories left their homes to follow their dreams in the U.S. In this episode, you'll meet a woman who broke out of poverty in the Philippines, only to find herself again trapped by hardship when she arrived in New York. Rosalind Tordesillas has the story of Mona, the domestic worker who escaped injustice to flourish as an activist and an artist.
This is about a lady who's going to leave her country for a greener pasture, and actually that's me.
This is Mona Lunat Cooker describing one of her paintings. This one is, in a way, her calling card. And it's called maleta. That means suitcase. In the picture, she carries one, but instead of talking about the things in her suitcase, she talks about what really burdened her when she made that trip.
She's very sad. You see, you can see the tears in her eyes. But you can see how, you know, her face and her... She's standing firmly. She's determined to work abroad for a living, though she's very sad. As you can see, there's a cage, you know, because I'm a victim of injustice in the Philippines and also my co-workers.
She arrived in the U.S. with barely anything besides her desire for a better life. And faced with more challenges once she arrived, that desire was all she had to keep her going. Today, I meet Mona on her way to work in Upper Manhattan. She has multiple caregiving jobs with different families. On this day, she's taking care of 3 and 5-year-old brothers.
This family, I think I'm working for 3 years already. Yeah, for the 2 kids. You know, help them from their homework. We do some artwork, pick them up from school, and then gave them snacks. Sometimes accompany them from other classes, the extra classes, until the mother, you know, comes around 5:45.
While the older brother tackles homework and the younger one plays with his Lego blocks on the living room floor, Mona and I chat.
Yeah, I'm happy right now in my job situation. It's fine.
Were there times when you weren't so satisfied?
Oh yeah, a lot of times.
She's 50 now, and Mona's been struggling with difficult working conditions since she was 17. That's when her father died. She was in her first year of college and had to drop out to take a full-time job in an electronics factory. At that job, she learned she couldn't keep quiet when she saw injustice.
I always feel the sufferings of others, you know what I mean? And workers, like women workers, especially when they have children, it's very difficult for them because we have 3 shifts. It's hard for a mother to take that shift, the 3rd shift, you know, because they want to take care of their children during nighttime. And if the children, for example, got sick, you know, they're also giving them warning or probably termination because they weren't able to work. You know, I think that's not fair.
Before long, she got involved in the labor union, becoming a rep. In 1995, contract negotiations deadlocked and the union went on strike. The dispute turned bitter and dragged out over many years. Mona was right in the middle of sit-ins and protests, including some that turned violent and resulted in arrests. The conflict took its toll on the workers.
I struggled so much. Yeah, I put up a little store in front of my house. Yeah, but I can't work. You know, I really focus on that labor dispute because I feel so bad about not for myself, for my coworkers who have been working there for 20 years of service. Some are couples. And I know that they are hardworking people and they... I feel bad for them and their children too.
5 years later, with the dispute still unresolved, Mona had lost hope of getting her factory job back. She couldn't support her mother and herself with what she earned from her store. Then she finally got a break. A distant relative who worked at the Canadian Embassy in New York offered her a job as a nanny and a housekeeper. Mona would have to leave her mother behind, but she could go to the U.S. on a diplomat-sponsored visa. And she could send money home. Mona packed her maletas and flew to New York. Looking back now, she sees how naive she was.
In the Philippines, people think that when you go to the U.S., It's like paradise. They didn't realize that majority of Filipinos really struggle so much before they get a good life here in America.
She wasn't prepared for the isolation. Mona lived with a family she worked for in suburban New Jersey with no available transportation. Her employer took away Mona's passport, so she couldn't leave.
She's even like prohibited me to call, use the telephone, call my friend. He said I shouldn't use her phone. I have no cell phone, and the only thing that you can communicate with your family is if you can buy a phone card. That place is isolated. There's no store over there. So everything should go to her.
The closest she had to a friend outside of work was the Filipina nanny who worked for her boss's brother. But they rarely saw each other.
Yeah, once in a while, but not really because, you know, she's more afraid than me.
But beyond the loneliness, Mona wasn't even earning enough to send money to her mom.
What will happen to me for $250 a month?
At first, her boss said Mona could supplement her pay with outside work.
320 out of 5.
On a rare outing, Mona met the Filipino employees of the local Dunkin' Donuts who offered her part-time work.
When the manager hired me, she went there, the employer, and told me that I can't work for them. Every time I have part-time, she was pissed off and she's trying to screw it up.
And with all her boss demanded, she couldn't have managed an outside job.
There are times that I'm really very sick. And Saturday, you know, it's my day off. And she's really upset when I refuse to go, even I was in my high fever. And there are times that she's going out with her kids and she's not even giving me food, you know, like asking me if I eat already, you know. And the whole day you're out and you can't even get your time to eat or buy something for yourself.
For 9 months, Mona tried to make the best of things. Then, after one of her days off, her boss threw a tantrum when she returned.
She started banging all the pots and pans in the kitchen and she's frowning at me as if like I did a very bad thing that day, you know. And I said, oh my God, this is it. I can't take this anymore.
Past her breaking point, Mona took a risk.
I stole my passport and her files. I really stole it.
And another.
That night when I said, oh, I can't take it anymore at 1 a.m. in the morning, it was snowing and very cold. It was February. I walked like I don't know how many miles of that just to get into the Dunkin' Donut store.
And then she made an even bolder move.
There's no transportation, so the Filipino crew in Dunkin' Donuts told me that you can ride in one of our trucks going to the train station in New Jersey, going to NYC. I'm scared she might learn that I escaped and she might follow me. So I was really frightened that night.
She had no choice but to rely on people she barely knew. She dug up old connections. One was someone she knew from the union back home.
And then when I reached the Penn Station, I called my friend.
But that friend didn't have room for her.
We talk about where can I stay. I end up staying with the brother-in-law of my friend. In the Philippines, before I leave, she told me that if something wrong happened to me, I can call this guy. And for sure, he's a good guy and gonna help me.
Edgar De Cepeda and his wife Cynthia sheltered Mona, though neither of them knew her. Here's Cynthia.
Being here in the country, that we were really far away from our loved ones, it was really hard to be in a situation like her. So he was willing to help her.
Mona's friend from the union helped her eventually find a place of her own in the city.
Actually, it's not a room. This is like a walk-in closet, really, really small, and it's $350 per month.
But like many New York apartments, its location made up for a lot.
This apartment is, there's a lot of Filipino community churchgoer because it's near St. Cecilia Church, where Filipino communities were used to go. So every Saturday and Sunday, we have a lot of visitors. So in 3 days, I already got a part-time work in Park Avenue.
Mona built a life for herself in the city. She settled in as one of the hundreds of thousands of domestic workers who keep New Yorkers' homes running smoothly. Over the next 10 years, she says she never really wanted for work. The longest she went without a job was a month. There was always someone willing to pay her to do things they couldn't or wouldn't do themselves.
You can find a job all the time, but you can be picky.
In one desperate period, she again took on a job where she was isolated in a distant suburb with too much work to handle on her own.
It was a mansion house, super huge, and I was the only one who was going to take care of the house. And so for a year, I stayed there for a live-in, and it's very difficult.
One more reason she couldn't be picky? She was now undocumented after losing her employer-sponsored visa.
Because they're not afraid to abuse you because, you know, they know that you will not fight back. You're going to be afraid to be questioned or to be investigated, you know.
So she had to put up with a lot.
One time he accused me of stealing something, which I was like, what is that? You know, that's the problem when you're working with other family. Something lost in the house, it's the housekeeper that is the... right away is the main suspect, which even you're innocent, how can you prove that you're not the one who steal it, right?
But even though Mona felt vulnerable, the union organizer in her refused to surrender her dignity.
People, when they're very rich, they treat their domestic worker as like crap, you know. They don't give you respect. And as an activist, as a progressive person, I'm having a difficulty dealing with those kind of things. So I end up losing my job and, you know, I really resigned right away. I don't think I deserve to be abused.
Wasn't she intimidated by her rich bosses?
I'm always afraid, but I always fight back.
Being undocumented also made the separation from her family more difficult to bear. With no papers, she couldn't travel. But there was one thing she could still do for her family from the U.S.,
I send a lot of money for my mom because I'm the only daughter, so I'm the only child, so she doesn't have any, you know, social security like that, so I really work hard for her.
While she took care of other people's children and homes, she herself had to pay someone else to care for her sick mother. Mona's mom died in 2010.
When she's still alive, she told me, like, oh, Mona, you should stay there. If something happened to me, you just stay there because I know you're able to, you know, save some money for yourself because you spend a lot of money for my, you know, medical and, you know, and everything.
Far from home, Mona lost all her immediate family. But she eventually found another sort of family here. Well, it was more like they found her.
Actually, there's a big rally, of immigration rally, 2006, downtown Manhattan. And it happened to be the program was in front of my work job, like in that building. So I saw a lot of flags, you know. I was like, where's the Filipino flag?
She found the flag and was intrigued by the group under it.
Yeah, okay, I'm curious. What are you doing here? So let's see, maybe I can help because I am a worker organizer in the Philippines, you know. Tell me what you want, what you really want. Tell me what you need, what you
really need. Tell me what you want, what you really want. This chance encounter lit an old fire in her. She joined the migrant workers group Damayan, sharing her own story to educate domestic workers on their rights. Turns out she had a lot to say.
I really have a very big concern about workers' rights. And I think, yeah, it's not only in the Philippines. Mostly Filipino domestic workers are more abused abroad also than in the Philippines. That's what I learned. I don't know, maybe the same, but I saw like extreme abuse.
Mona tackled her frustration about working conditions for her and other immigrants through her activism. But after a while, she realized there was another kind of struggle within her she needed to address.
When you're isolated and you feel depressed, I was a kind of person who wants to be productive and artistic when getting depressed, you know. So I start, I bought some like markers and start drawing.
The walls in her sunny apartment in Queens are covered with canvases that depict her life in bright colors.
This painting is from my barrio. I grew up in that barrio and near that church. And the barrio is somewhere in Cavite. So it's like about fiesta.
One painting depicts the workers' strike she endured in the Philippines. but two paintings dominate the room, both of women. They're like bookends to the volumes of her story. The first is the Maleta painting. The other shows a machete-wielding woman on horseback, her hair flying against a fiery red background. I feel like she's barreling down on me. I recognize her immediately as Gabriela Silang. Silang led an 18th century revolt against the Spanish colonizers. She's the rare woman among Filipino national heroes and a sort of patron saint for Filipina feminists.
I painted this because I feel like I hope that there are more women who will fight for the rights of our people.
Mona has some stability in her life now. She and her husband of 3 years make a good living and she has a green card. But she's still talking about fighting. She still can't keep quiet. She's telling her story and painting it because she knows there are many who are still out there, like she was, who need to hear it. For Feet in Two Worlds, this is Rosalind Tordesillas.
In 2011, Mona exhibited her work at an immigration-themed show of women artists organized by the nonprofit Affirm. She's also illustrated a children's book called Manny and the Mango Tree by Ali R. and Valerie Bustamante. You can see Mona's paintings on our website, fi2w.org. I'm Jocelyn Gonzalez, producer of this series, and our editor is Carolina Gonzalez. John Rudolph is the executive producer of Feet in Two Worlds. Special thanks to Rachel Stevens and Rachel Bongiorno. The music in this episode is by Acid 42, Lee Rosevere, TJ Moti, and A Right Wizard. Additional audio from video by Maguito Valve, Mark Sish, and Dom Mayan. Feet in Two Worlds brings the work of immigrant journalists to public radio and the web. Our supporters include the Ralph E. Ogden Foundation, the David and Catherine Moore Family Foundation, the Nicholas B. Ottaway Foundation, and listeners like you. Feet in Two Worlds is a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. Visit our website at fi2w.org.